Blog Talk Radio.
Its origin was with Abraham Lincoln after the American Civil War to honor the military veterans, people who had served in both the Union and the Confederate armies. And of course, it's a holiday, and there's a lot of drinking and partying and that sort of thing. But we must never forget, they died, they served so that we may be free today. There are still people who don't appreciate this, either native-born Americans or even those who claim to have come here to contribute, but don't. They come here to co-opt and corrupt. Now, the veterans, abuse of veterans is nothing new in American history. It goes back to the American Revolutionary War, where the foot soldiers who served in that conflict to get us our freedom from Britain were promised all kinds of things, I believe, land and that sort of thing. And, of course, a lot of them were illiterate, couldn't read, and they were ripped off. They didn't, the government did not fulfill its promises to the military veterans then. After the American Civil War, the Grant administration, I understand, there were scandals in the Veterans Bureau then. During the Coolidge, the Harding administration, there were scandals and denial of benefits promised to the veterans, the doughboys of World War I. After World War II, the veterans wanted educational benefits and other benefits that were promised to them. And ironically, it was the William Randolph Hearst and the Hearst papers that editorialized that the Congress should grant those benefits that were promised, or that the veterans were led to believe they were going to get after the end of World War II. And now, this is not new, this current scandal. You can't blame this on Obama. It goes back to the Bush-Clinton administrations, where there were scandals in the Veterans Department in Atlanta, Georgia, where there were officials who were denying benefits and lying about statistics, but were in effect getting all kinds of bonuses and perks. And some of them were buying yachts, taking expensive vacations. So it's nothing new. It's just blown up or erupted in the Obama male administration. Now, during the Clinton administration, according to another veteran, a woman, whose father was one of the last of the Tammany Hall politicians in New York City, Janice Allen, she's dead now, bless her, but still bless her soul. She was a veteran nurse at Pearl Harbor during World War II, and after that she became an accountant and was a nurse here in San Francisco. She lived in public housing, and she was monitoring the care and the promises and misconduct of officials who were running the San Francisco Housing Authority. And among the scandals were when a veteran died, I think this was at Clementina Towers, and we're going to document more of this on Amicus Veritas YouTube, AMICUSVERITAS. The veterans who had no immediate survivors or heirs, their property was stolen by the managers in the housing authority here in San Francisco. The cars were driven by managers at Clementine Towers. Excuse me, I'm still getting over this cold. And of course, in so-called affordable housing funded by the federal government through the Community Development Block Grant Program and Housing and Urban Development Department at 50 Resolve Street, RIZAL. Veterans there were complaining about the abuse of this guy, Tony Garcia, who came here from the Philippines claiming that he was a legitimate refugee from Marcos persecution. In fact, this guy was a sleazebag. And what happened was he was abusing women who were widows of servicemen who served at Bataan and Corregidor and in the U.S.-Filipino Army. And the family harassed these women. One woman suffered a heart attack. Another woman was maced when she was getting her mail. Another veterans who refused to vote for the Agnos people. What would happen was there were guys dressed up as policemen who would come around carrying literature for the Agnos administration, or maladministration, I should say. Raul Almison was threatened. A hitman named Tony Yu, Y-U, was brought in from Manila. He was given a gun by the Garcias, and he went around to the various departments and threatened the people to stop protesting against Tony Garcia. When they complained to the San Francisco Police Department, Sammy Yu fled town, and the FBI couldn't catch him in time. This was part of a federal lawsuit. It is documented. These things go on and have gone on and may be still going on. So this is nothing new, the abuse of veterans. It's just that the whole scandal now has balled up and has erupted on this current male administration. And keep in mind, none of these people in the in this current Obama, Biden administration, none of them, have, with the exception of Shin Seki, who had a lot of questions about him, he's the only one that has served in the federal military. Gates, who was Secretary of Defense, I believe have served in the military. Not sure about that. But you look at the people that Obama has appointed, judges and other officials, very few of them have federal military background. We don't even know if they had registered for the U.S. military draft when they were 18, as they were required to do. So these are some of the things that have gone on. And among the people who have tried to help veterans are the Bill Brumbaugh, who was very ill himself, Art Bernclaw, who recently died, and we have some of his interviews that he gave me to air, and also the nephew of Smedley Butler, the U.S. Marine, who said war is a wreck. And we're going to salute the U.S. Marines right now because they are our first line of defense. Well, I don't know what happened there. We've got our new computer, and these are some of the strangest things that have been going on. We'll find out when we replay. Now, among the other, we mustn't forget the Navy, and I think this is an important military piece of music, Eternal Father, and it's appropriate for today. Our great opera singers, Melchior, Lauritz Melchior, came from Denmark. Young man, they became an American citizen about 1945, and he sang this song, "What America Means to Me." I think it's appropriate for Memorial Day.
What is America to me? A name, a map, a star I see, a certain word, democracy.
Democracy.
What is America to me? The house I live in, a plot of earth and street, the grocer and the butcher and the people that I meet. The children in the playground, the faces that I see, all races, all religions, that's America to me.
All races, all religions, that's America to me.
The place I work in, the worker at my side, the little town or city where my people lived and died. The howdy and the handshake, they're appealing to me. The right to speak my mind out, that's America for me.
The right to speak my mind out, that's America to me.
Above me, the paintings on the wall, the little corn and you stand, and the house and my soul, the wedding on the churchyard, the love on the field, the dream of me and mine for 150 years. The town I live in, the street, the house, the room, the payment of the city, all I got and all in bloom. The church, the school, the clubhouse, the million lights I see, but especially the people, that's America to me.
You mustn't finish the U.S. Air Force, and I think this one is appropriate. musical theme for today. President Warren Harding made it. He was known for bloviating, but he was an editor of a Ohio newspaper, and he gave great speeches. He had a very deep voice. Unfortunately, we have audio history of some of the things that he said. Here he talks about Americanism.
My countrymen, first flaming torch of Americanism was lighted in framing the federal constitution in 1787. The pilgrims signed their simple and suggested covenant a full century and a half before and set aflame their beacon of liberty on the coast of Massachusetts. Other pioneers of New World freedom were rearing their new standards of liberty from Jamestown to Plymouth for five generations before Lexington and Concord heralded the new era. It was all American in the best and result, yet all of it lacked the soul of nationality. In simple truth, there was no thought of nationality in the revolution for American independence. The colonists were resisting a wrong, and freedom was their solace. Once it was achieved, nationality was the only agency suited to its preservation. Americanism really began when robed in nationality. the American Republic began the blaze trail of representative popular government. Representative democracy was proclaimed the state agency of highest human freedom. America headed the forward procession of civil, human, and religious liberty, which ultimately will affect the liberation of all mankind. The federal constitution is the very base of all American liberty, the ark of the covenant of American liberty, the very temple of equal rights. The constitution does abide and ever will, so long as the republic survives. Let us hesitate before we surrender the nationality which is the very soul of highest Americanism. This republic has never failed humanity nor endangered civilization.
Now, when General MacArthur was fired by Harry Truman back in the Korean War, he came through San Francisco, got a ticker tape parade, then went on to Washington, D.C., and he addressed Congress. And this is very important about military men who get the political bug. MacArthur's farewell statement to Congress is very important, and I think it is also appropriate on this Memorial Day.
Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. From the very start, workable methods were found insofar as individual citizens were concerned. But the mechanics of an instrumentality of larger international scope have never been successful. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we will not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. The problem basically is theological, and involves a spiritual recrudescent and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh. But once war is forced upon us, there is no other alternative than to apply every available means to bring it to a swift end. War's very object is victory, not prolonged indecision. In war, there is no substitute for victory. There are some who, for varying reasons, would appease Red China. They are blind to history's clear lesson. For history teaches with unmistakable emphasis that appeasement but begets new and bloodier war. It points to no single instance where this end has justified that means, where appeasement has led to more than a sham peace. Like blackmail, it lays the basis for new and successively greater demands until, as in blackmail, violence becomes the only other alternative. Why, my soldiers asked of me, surrender military advantages to an enemy in the field? I could not answer. Some may say, to avoid spread of the conflict into an all-out war with China. Others, to avoid Soviet intervention. Neither explanation seems valid, for China is already engaging with the maximum power it can commit, and the Soviet will not necessarily mesh its actions with our moves like a cobra. Any new enemy will more likely strike whenever it feels that the relativity in military or other potential is in its favor on a worldwide basis. The tragedy of Korea is further heightened by the fact that as military action is confined to its territorial limits, it condemns that nation, which it is our purpose to save, to suffer the devastating impact of full naval and air bombardment while the enemy's sanctuaries are fully protected from such attack and devastation. Of the nations of the world, Korea alone, up to now, is the sole one which has risked its all against communism. The magnificence of the courage and fortitude of the Korean people defies description. They have chosen to risk death rather than slavery. Their last words to me were, "Don't scuttle the Pacific." I have just left your fighting sons in Korea. They have met all tests there, and I can report to you without reservation that they are splendid in every way. It was my constant effort to preserve them and end this savage conflict honorably and with the least loss of time and a minimum sacrifice of life. Its growing bloodshed has caused me the deepest anguish and anxiety. Those gallant men will remain often in my thoughts and in my prayers, always. I am closing my 52 years of military service. When I joined the army, even before the turn of the century, it was the fulfillment of all my boyhood hopes and dreams. The world has turned over many times since I took the oath on the plain at West Point, and the hopes and dreams have long since vanished. But I still remember the refrain of one of the most popular barrack ballads of that day, which proclaimed most proudly that old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And like the old soldier of that ballad, I now close my military career and just fade away. An old soldier who tried to do his duty as God gave him the light to see that duty. Goodbye.
Well, that was the end of General MacArthur. I think it's appropriate. Old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And I think it's very appropriate. This Memorial Day, we'll be back Wednesday at 3:30, and hopefully we'll get the rest of this resolved. We've got new equipment, and there still is a software problem. So go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas. Good night. Have a remainder of a safe holiday.